The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Nick Urich. He is Vice President of Federal Sales at FireEye. Good morning, Nick. How are you today?
Good morning, John. Doing great. Beautiful
Just
day in the Capitol.
Fresh off a conference in downtown D.C., we had Nick driven over here quickly this morning to give this interview and talk about IT security. We're going to approach it from a couple different angles here. But before we begin, Nick, maybe give us a quick background of your history and how you wound up working for FireEye, please.
Sure. Thanks, John. So, you know, FireEye has just been an incredible company. I've been here almost 2 years. Prior to that, I worked for another company that had some really great technology. They really started to get into security through credentialing and fire application firewalls. Web application firewalls, but then I really started to see that reported in the news, there was a lot of information about the state of the threat becoming very advanced, a lot of detection around zero day, which we really hadn't heard before, and who were the leading companies in that? So kind of scoping out, hey, what are the opportunities of where federal is investing? What are the hardest problems they're trying to solve? FireEye had a set of solutions that continues to evolve that address that part of the market pretty well. So joined 2 years ago, we really started ramping up our federal team. As a matter of fact, the team has taken form a lot faster than I thought it would. So we started with a pretty small group. Today it's grown over 250% in the last 14 months. Of course, our revenues have trailed right behind that, which is great. And we're continuing to push out information, continuing to push out a lot of assessments, and also a lot of good engineering insights into the current state of the hack and the threat, and we're bringing more products to market.
State of the hack, that could be the name of a radio show, couldn't it? What's the state of the hack?
It could be.
So FireEye, I've been around since 2004, over 1,000 employees, pretty well respected throughout the industry. But I think from the perspective of my listeners here, they may be more familiar with a company called Mandiant. And what is the relationship between FireEye and Mandiant?
Sure, John. So starting off with FireEye, FireEye actually acquired Mandiant on July 2nd of this year. FireEye started 10 years ago, and the whole premise of the company was to build technology. We started on the web vector, threat vector, to figure out how do we detect threats that have never been seen before. And if you look at a lot of the traditional signature-based systems, they work on what is previously known. And so FireEye developed technology with a virtual machine that could detonate traffic coming across the web so we could see any anomalous behavior that would do callbacks and start downloading malware that represented a threat never seen before. And in the process of that, a lot of the signature-based systems, AV systems, IPS, IDS, SIMs, they're very chatty. They send up lots and lots of alerts. So we set our thresholds very low. Our false positive rates are very low so that you can really hone in on the threats that are important that you see that have a high degree of severity potentially while finding things that you've never seen before in your network.
So could we summarize it by saying that the offering you have is a virtual machine-based security platform that focuses on endpoint security? Is that a fair assessment?
You know, all the way through the network. So we protect all vectors. So we have solutions for web, email, mobile, host, endpoint, file-based. And if you look at what FireEye does with all the predictive front-end intelligence that we bring to the market, combined with all the Mandiant endpoint intelligence they bring and merge that together, you know, we come to the market with a couple of very unique benefits to our customers, very distinguishing to the company as far as how we detect threats, and then the employment of all the threat intelligence we have from over 4 million VMs deployed worldwide on over 2 million endpoints.
And so my listeners can take advantage of FireEye because not only do they have a local presence, but they have a national, international presence so we can share information to help develop these virtual machines that can be aware of what's going on in any kind of a zero-day threat landscape. Would that be a good summary?
Oh, it's a great characterization. So we have worldwide sales teams, worldwide engineering teams, worldwide professional services teams deployed in over 120 countries. We're helping out a lot of different governments. Government has been kind of a worldwide presence. It's more of what I'm focused on. And so we're starting to see things that we can share, we can learn from. Some of the benefits, for example, of FireEye technology is that through all those millions of sensors that we have deployed, we collect that data, we analyze that data, and then we package that up for disbursement out to our worldwide user base. And we do that on an hourly basis.
I just thought of the phrase, there's a disturbance in the force. All those millions of sensors, maybe that's what's going on, huh?
Yeah.
Obi-Wan Kenobi in Pitas, California, saying, well, there's a disturbance in the force. Alert everyone, huh?
Well, maybe, you know, may the FireEye and Mandy and Force be with you.
Yes, that's a good one.
So there's a lot of rich, actionable intel there, and there's some uniqueness that we bring to the market that really help in the identification of zero-day threats, advanced malware, and other severity levels of threats that are coming in that we can really help you scope out, contextualize, and find solutions to.
You were just at a conference called MIRCON, M-I-R-C-O-N, and you had a lot of very interesting speakers there, including this guy named Alexander. And there was product announcements there, one involving Apple, believe it or not. Maybe you can give us a thumbnail sketch of what went on at that conference and maybe how our listeners can benefit from some of the information that was released there.
Sure. Yeah, sure. So MIRCON, the Mandiant Incident Response Conference, this was our fifth iteration of the conference. It's always held in the fall. We held it in the D.C. area at the Omni Hotel, and it was a heavily attended event. So you can tell that there's just really a penchant for new information, for different ways to combat today's cyber threats. So we had several keynotes, all heavily attended. Quite frankly, it was standing room only, and it was a big ballroom, and there must have been 200 people in the back of the room that couldn't find seats.
And here's what you have to remember. According to Zoomerang, attendance in conferences here in 2014 is down 44%.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that someone's going to get out of their chair and go down to a conference to hear what you folks have to say, I mean, this is quite an achievement, believe it or not. I mean, it really is. I've done enough conferences to know that if you can get over 1,000 people to come down and listen to someone like Alexander or the people on mm-hmm. your staff, I mean, it's quite an accomplishment.
It is. We had a very big cross-section of people there. We had management people. We had a lot of technical people. And we broke out. We had keynotes that were very well attended, but we had a lot of breakout sessions for incident response and professionals who deal with that. R&D tracks for people who are developing architectures and figuring out different ways of how do I scope and contextualize problems. And then a lot of management packs. So what is the business impact? And what do I need to protect most? And what are the protection profiles that I need to come up with in my organization that I can afford that protects my most vital assets, helps stop exfiltration, and just overall impact? So it was a very, very good day. We had a similar type of experience early in the year. We do a FireEye federal conference. We have it scheduled for next May. And again, heavily attended. So you can kind of see that with all the attacks we see in the press, all the attacks that we're seeing on all enterprises, and just kind of illustrated further by 60 Minutes on Sunday when Director Comey of the FBI was talking about the state of the threat. It's something that's vitally important to a person, to an organization, and it's something that we all have to deal with, quite frankly.
If you'd like more information, the company's pretty easy, FireEye, but the website's FireEye.com. There's a whole bunch of E's in there. FireEye.com. I was at that site this morning, all kinds of information. You can find more information about the conference. In fact, there's a hashtag for you people on Twitter out there, hashtag MIRCON. You can see who was speaking and when. And you can see what people commented about the different presentations, what this person said about this, what this person said about that. And I think your company is represented very well in town with a couple people. We'll talk about maybe that in the next break, talk about who's affiliated with your organization and what kind of people attend these events. And it's always interesting to see, okay, so ABC Company has an event and who attends, and your company has an event and you list of who attends. All of a sudden, you kind of see the value of that's placed in that conference, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think people come to these events particularly really to learn, to gain some insights, to find out potentially some best practices that other organizations are doing. So we had a variety of formats to present that type of information. It had a great keynote by General Alexander at the end of the day. He kind of tied together a lot of the information and kind of the threat analysis that we're seeing out, not only here but abroad, in the type of attacks. So, you know, if you hear a lot of stuff about China, we hear a lot of stuff about Russia, the Syrian army, cyber army. But what are they looking for and how are they attacking? What are their methods? And it's kind of interesting to see, you know, difference between crimeware and nation state attacks.
And I think that's fascinating. I love the good keynotes, but what's more important, I think, is the face-to-face and small sessions. I did a training class on Friday with 20 people in the room. There's a whole lot of, you don't know what you're talking about. You're wrong. You're right. No, I'm right. Back and forth and back and forth. And boy, that little interchange always helps, especially with security professionals who have to be quiet most of the time. Let's take a break. Right. We come back, talk more about FireEye.com and computer security for the federal government. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Nick Urich, Vice President Federal Sales at FireEye. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Nick Urich. He is Vice President Federal Sales at FireEye. We're talking about cybersecurity in the federal government. He is fresh off their local conference, the MIRCon, where he had over 1,000 people in attendance. They listened to people like Keith Alexander, and we talked about what was going on there. And the whole company itself been around 2004, bought out Mandiant, I think, in 2013, and people may know about Mandiant. If you want more information on FireEye, it's FireEye.com, and there's blogs and tweets and all kinds of stuff there. If you are sitting in a bus or in a metro stop or talking to someone about security, they're usually going to say, whoa, what about the shell shock stuff? What about this? Because that gets the front page of the Washington Post. And
sure.
But I think there's other things besides shell shock that may have had more effect here in 2014. And during the break, we were talking about this little thing called Saffron Rose. So what is Saffron Rose? What's that all about?
So, John, that was a very interesting cyber event that happened earlier this year. I think everybody heard and saw the announcement. And were you ready for the discontinuation of XP? It was an Internet Explorer event that occurred. They found vulnerabilities in. There was a lot of people, including in the federal government, who were running older systems that really were not given any further security patch management. So this was something that FireEye had detected. And working with Microsoft, and I know Microsoft gets beat up quite a bit. Anybody with a Windows-based system feels like they're always vulnerable to a lot of viruses. But Microsoft actually does a very good job in responding to these. So we had a window of where we discovered it. We discovered what the anomalies were, reported it to Microsoft. And in a time period of only 22 hours, Microsoft and FireEye responded to this. And Microsoft developed a patch and pushed it out to over 120 million machines worldwide. So that was a really good example of a
incident
current
response, I would think. Those are the two words there, huh?
Oh, an almost record time. And you can imagine, you know, a smaller company like FireEye with some very unique detection tools and capabilities, working with a very big company like Microsoft, who takes this problem very seriously, and who pushed out a solution probably in record time.
You know, if you want to do research on this company, I suggest you use these three words, and you put them in quotation marks, FireEye detected, because then fill in the blank, because
right.
This thing, it pops up in the news. It pops up. And
constantly.
FireEye detected X. X. And I think that's the whole idea behind zero-day attacks. By the way, here's a fun fact. Windows 7, 50% of operating systems for Microsoft. XP, 24%. Windows 8 has got 12%.
Really?
So what about Windows 10? What happened to Windows 9? I went in the street and find Windows 9. But still, look at that penetration of XP, 24%. So there are people in the federal government with XP, and they're sitting out there vulnerable, aren't they? Unpatched.
They are.
Just might as well take and just slap them in the head or something. I mean, this is like unlocking your front door.
Right. You know, it just kind of points to the fact that architectures, security, computing architectures, host-based, endpoint, it all needs to be current. And it needs a current set of tools to address the current state of the threat. Unfortunately, we find, you know, a lot of government entities. I was sitting next to one government agency yesterday at or last week at our MIRCon conference, and we were discussing, so what tools are you using? Are you using signature-based tools, or are you using more state-of-the-art things that can find threats that have previously been unknown, like zero-day threats? And unfortunately, they're kind of stuck in this mode where they haven't invested yet. So they're in a very tools-based approach where they have antivirus, where they have SIEMs, where they have IPS IDS, where they have application firewalls. And the state of the current threat these tools are really good for what they provide for known threats. So they develop signatures for them. But the unknown threats are bypassing those defenses today. So we started to see people migrate up from this tools-based approach to something that's more resilient. But along the way, quite frankly, we find that the next step of the evolution are organizations that step into more of a compliancy mode. So, hey, we have people, we have processes, We have controls now set in place, and I'm doing more of a compliancy checkbox than I am actually building resiliency. And so, you know, nation state, criminal crimeware that gets through happens in a very prevalent type of basis.
Let me try to paint this picture for some of the, you know, there are cybersecurity specialists that are listening and they get it. They know exactly what's going on. But there are people who may be on the periphery here, but they may influence decisions. And there's some people are kind of scratching their heads and don't understand what a zero day is. Let me rewind the tape here. Years ago, back in the early 90s, there would be viruses out there. And what would happen is you would subscribe to something like McAfee. And believe it or not, they would detect the virus. Then they would mail you a floppy disk with the antivirus signature for it. Let's do this. Now, my kids don't believe this. And then you'd put it in your machine and you'd be protected against that. So what would happen would be is that on May 1st, they would detect a virus. Then you'd get it in the mail maybe 10 days later. And between May 1st and May 10th, all of a sudden there was an attack opening and people would find out about. Okay, speed it up. People start distributing through the internet, so you can you actually automatic updates. Fine, still midnight threats announced, automatic update noon. That's still 12 hours. So that's what a zero day threat's all about. And increasingly, it's a gap between a patch and a known incident. Is that a good definition of a zero day?
Yeah, I would. Zero day is almost a misnomer. You think of zero day, it's like,
it's the
okay.
The day itself, yeah.
That's the day itself, and it's not. These are just previously undetected threats. They're found on this day. But you have to have the tools that can detect these type of threats, and they evade all signature-based systems. So, and the threats are coming so fast and growing so exponentially. The only way we can do this is through our worldwide sensor grid to feed this data up into our threat intel teams. They do the research on it, and then they push out hourly updates 24/7 to all of those millions of sensors.
So it's behavior-based instead of signature-based.
It is. It is. And if you look at what makes FireEye unique, why has it grown so much? If you look at the last 19 zero-day threats that had been found, FireEye discovered 14 of those.
FireEye detected.
FireEye detected.
That's it. Just type that in.
So if I could tell you about, you know, the phase of the attack. So we see multi-flow, multi-vector attacks. So multi-vector, email, web, web-based. We see in the flow of an attack, the first initial inception of a piece of malware being downloaded. It's in an unencrypted format. And it's the first foothold. It's the first bit of code that sits in there, and then we containerize that. We put it into our detonation chambers, and we see how that responds. If it does anything anomalous, if it calls out, if it calls back, that's something we contain in our environment, and we don't let it spread from there. So the net result is we detect this before the next payload of malware can come down, which is encrypted. So, John, I would tell you the very first inception, the very first piece of code that is dropped that gets the foothold is the most critical time in the exploit defect detection phase of when to pick up a targeted attack or advanced malware that hasn't been seen before. And quite frankly, other than FireEye, we haven't seen another company yet who's developed that type of technology.
Years ago, 10 years ago, I was taking all these tests for security. Remember all those tests you'd take and you learn about this strange thing called a honeypot. And years ago, it was popular. And then it kind of went in disfavor. All of a sudden, it's being popularized again. Theoretically, maybe a company like FireEye has a honeypot out there. Maybe they can grab that code unencrypted before it hits something else.
Sure.
You're not going to say if you do or not, but it's kind of coincidental that it's more popular now, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but you know, if you want some good, rich contextual information, honeypots is one way to kind of gather that. You see threats come in, you see the data come in, and you start to really scope out and contextualize what you see inside of that threat. And if there's anything that's kind of new, anything that's a high severity, and then figuring out how do I contain and resolve this.
Yeah, you have to be pretty confident setting a trap. It's like setting a trap for a tiger. Okay, I got this tiger.
Right.
Now what? You got a tiger by the tail, as we talked about earlier. But I think you have enough professionals that know how to handle something. It's almost like I envision them with like a surgical containment suit on, like the Ebola folks, because if just by touching it, you could almost transfer it itself, huh?
Sure, you can. And when we look at the current state of what happens in organizations, we're seeing threats on average living inside of a network today at 229 days. That's down about 10% from last year. Then it takes it takes additional time, 1 to 3 months, for remediation. So we're seeing threats previously unknown sitting in a network that can take up to 10 or 11 months to go from detection to remediation. So the whole goal of what FireEye combining in with Mandiant is to get that detection to remediation time down from 10 months to less in minutes.
Yeah.
And that's a very lofty goal, but all of the technologies that we're developing right now are highly supportive of that.
And I think that that helps everyone, especially with the new malware that's out there. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about social media and some information that my listeners can get from FireEye, and maybe talk more about conferences coming up in the spring. We can actually sit down, grab someone from FireEye and say, hey, buddy, how do I handle this? Rather than exposing things maybe on email that may not want to be exposed.
Sure.
You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Nick Urich, Vice President of Sales at FireEye. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Nick Urich. He's Vice President of Federal Sales at FireEye. We're talking about cybersecurity. We just went on a long block talking about zero-day attacks and zero-day threats. I thought it was a real good summary of what the company can do and how it can help my listeners. In the break, we talk about working with more information about this and more information about that. I have a blog called Tech Tuesday Blog. You can type that in, and I'm probably blogging about this interview. Is there a blog that you write, Nick, or is there a blog that you read that my listeners get information? Some like the information that way.
Not one that I write, but, you know, I check in on different blogs from time to time. Politico has Morning Cyber, Talcopan. It's got some good insights, different events that are going on in the cyber world. Sablon Gorman of Wall Street Journal also has another blog and also articles that she
first
publishes.
Name is what?
It's a lady, Sablon Gorman.
Sablon's her first name, huh?
Yep.
Gorman, G-O-R-M-A-N.
Right. And Mike
FireEye
Riley
itself, FireEye.com/blog. Get blogs there, huh?
Oh, there is a rich trove of information at our blog site, at our blog. And then also at our site, FireEye.com, there's just a massive collection of white papers. Good architectural papers, good state of the threat papers that are published that have their origins within FireEye and also within Mandiant.
Yeah, I was there this morning and I saw a red call to action for a lot of different types of white papers. In fact, just white papers for federal government applications. So if you're a govy and you want to know more, you can go to FireEye.com and download all kinds of information. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of listeners read blogs and tweet and everything else, and some listen to podcasts, and I'm a big believer in podcasts. In fact, the Edison Institute estimated that in the last month, 39 million podcasts were downloaded. I mean, radio isn't dying. Radio's doing pretty good, and I think you folks have had a presence
sure.
on Federal News Radio something. Another one of your colleagues was on the air. What was his name again?
Tony Cole. Tony
C-O-L-E. That's easy to spell.
Very easy. Tony is our global government CTO. He's been with FireEye for 2 years, and prior to that, many years at McAfee, running their professional services and then doing similar CTO-type roles. He also has, he's done podcasts, and I think we'll hear him upcoming on WTOP. And certainly, if you go to our FireEye.com site, you can find information from him.
And he just won an award, didn't he? Or is he had an award coming up this month?
Yeah. So he's GCN Executive of the Year. So that's a great honor. I think it was unexpected to him. I can tell you he has been trotting the globe, telling the story about cyber, advanced threat protection, best practices against that, and it's something that's well-deserved. We're very proud of it.
So if this interview has piqued your interest and you want to listen to more, you can go to federalnewsradio.com or WTOP and type in Tony Cole, T-O-N-Y-C-O-L-E, and probably stumble on that interview and listen mm-hmm. to it the next time you're at the gym. And this is what's interesting is that TV may be dying because my kids don't ever come near a television set, but they listen to podcasts very selectively, listen to the car or listen when usually at the gym or something. And so podcasts are still there. And so I think that's the value of many interviews like this is that you can get information while you're doing something else or listen while you're sending out emails or putting together a PowerPoint presentation, all kinds of interesting aspects here. One of the hashtags that you wanted to use for this interview is mobile security. And how can you avoid mobile security in this day and age with the new iPhone and people trying to bend it and not bend it and the 3/4 of an inch bigger than the new iPhone 6, everything else, iPhone 6 Plus. There's something called the IoT, and that's also a hashtag, the Internet of Things. All kinds of mobile devices out there, all kinds of sensors. We talked about sensors before. So how does that fit in with all these headaches that my listeners have plenty of headaches already. They don't want to have thousands more sensors to worry about as well.
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing. I think more and more of those sensors are coming. I just bought a new television, part of a home theater system. It was installed for 2 months. And 6 weeks in, it starts to call out that I need an update. You hit an OK button, and it goes out to its manufacturer site, downloads and updates. So everything connected through the internet is going to have those type of sensors and probably cause some human interaction to keep up the management of them. So we see more and more of that type of thing coming. As a matter of fact, having the, you know, for a government user, having the right type of architectures and tools in place is becoming even more critical. You know, it gets past the technical problem and it gets into a business problem. What am I trying to protect the most? And how do I do that? And how do I afford that? And if you look at government budgets, sequestration, things that are going on with the current state of the budget, we get into the situation where we're not growing human resources. We're not growing the budget, obviously. But the threat is increasing exponentially. So how do I combat that? How do I figure out ways that I can manage this in a context of what I have to spend today in terms of people and money on a problem that's becoming ever more prevalent?
I was just thinking of an analogy, talking about your house. Suppose you had a house with a half acre and a lawnmower, and all of a sudden you were given another half acre, so you had another whole acre to mow the lawn, same lawnmower.
Right.
So my govies have, in effect, 3 acres and the same single little push lawnmower. It's like, well, how the heck do you get push lawnmower for all this new active threats, all kinds of different devices?
Sure.
One thing I got to ask, I know a lot of smug, self-righteous people who have Apple products. And they say, well, I got an Apple, I don't have to worry about anything. Everything's great, and I don't have to worry about viruses or anything. Well, guess what? That's not true, is it? According to, let's use the phrase again, FireEye detected something in the Apple, didn't they?
Right. So we work quite a bit with all manufacturers of technology. You know, and the technology sector itself becomes a very big threat vector. And no one is immune from this, whether it's an Apple user or an Android user, any type of Unix, Linux.
So Apple people are vulnerable as well. Is that the Oh, that's interesting.
I know my kids told me, hey, I need a MacBook, I need an iPhone, because they don't get viruses.
Right, I heard that too, yeah.
They do get viruses. As a matter of fact, at MirrorCon, we announced that we will now have, as part of our mobile threat protection, support for iOS. And if you look at where kind of the crimeware is going, you kind of follow the money. And you follow the intellectual property, and mobile devices are already becoming one of the biggest attack vectors that we have. People depend more on them, so they become a bigger surface for perpetrators.
I think it's called the Mac backdoor iWorm or some kind of a threat in that general area. And it was designed for maybe the people who have their guard down. They don't have their hands up anymore, their guard down, and the malware writers realize that, and that's where they hit. Hmm?
Yeah, very true. And, you know, you find some companies that address these problems a little more publicly. I know Microsoft does. They kind of accept that as part of the culture of what happens in the world of threat and mitigation. Apple, you know, is put out some patches. They're very specific in their messaging as to what is happening. At the end of the day, if we can find ways to contain and mitigate and resolve, then I think we get much further down the road. But it is an expanding surface area for attacks.
You know, I took some notes here. When we talked about Tony Cole, we use the word GCN. It's Government Computer News, and it's the GCN Gala that's coming up, I think, in mid-October here. And Tony Cole is going to get an award for Executive of the Year. You might as well brag.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if something good happens, you might as well tell people, because inevitably bad things happen and things get confused. But he shows that I think what this award shows is that he listens to federal customers. He understands what their problems are and at least tries to solve them. I think that's
right.
It's like the Listener of the Year Award. That's what it should be.
Yeah, and John, I can tell you, I haven't moved around a lot in this industry. I've worked for about 5 or 6 companies. For whatever reason, they've all been based on the West Coast. FireEye, as a company, is investing very heavily in worldwide government. I know that's good news for our federal users, but things like certifications, our ability to interact at the highest levels in government with an executive staff, a government affairs team, is very pronounced. So one of the key tenets of the company, quite frankly, is win the government, win the market. And we kind of do that from a perspective of, if we can develop the right solutions for one of the most heavily attacked organizations in the world, federal government, then we can bring that out to the marketplace in a richer set of solutions.
When you said the word certifications, I have a friend who just sat for the CISSP exam, and it's just a written exam. It used to be a physical exam. You have to put together servers and computers, if you remember. Is it still a well-respected certification for cyber professionals?
Sure. So we have a lot of certification courses for professionals. And in certifications, I was probably more alluding to were some of the mandated certifications that we need to get as passing through government as being tested for vulnerabilities. So things like common criteria, FIPS 140-2, all the STIG testing that goes on, all the certificates of net worthiness. These are things, it's a myriad of things that we have to invest in. And the company has stepped up to those readily and has worked diligently toward making sure that we secure all of those.
Yeah, I was just referring to my little listener over at Department of Commerce who's listening to this at 2 o'clock in the morning when there's snow on the ground and wondering if CSSB had any value that he just spent 6 months studying for. But I have all kinds of different listeners here, including the people who are worried about compliance and certification from the federal government. Let's take a break. We'll come back, talk a little bit about Twitter, and give you one of my scientific surveys to find out if you are a card-carrying nerd
okay.
or not.
Look forward to it.
You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Nick Urich, Vice President Sales at FireEye. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Nick Urich. He is Vice President of Federal Sales at FireEye. And that sounds good, but it's not really radio friendly until you think of it. FireEye.com. You can get blogs there and white papers, and you can listen to other folks from FireEye on the radio here and podcasts, all kinds of information. Some people like to get information over their Twitter feed. I sure do. And my Twitter handle is at Ray Gilray. And I guess it's at FireEye. Is that correct?
Sure. Yeah. Sure. At FireEye.com. Yep.
That FireEye is your handle.
At FireEye.
All kinds of information. In fact, there's a hashtag MIR, M-I-R-C-O-N. And if you type that in, you find out, well, what did General Alexander really say at that conference? That's always kind of interesting.
Right. You'll find those updates readily available.
So the last block, to keep you up informed, we talked about actually Apple being vulnerable and a company like FireEye trying to figure out how to prevent people from attacking the Apple system. So that's always good. We've talked about many different things, threat prevention, zero-day attacks. But what a lot of my listeners are doing is they're listening to this interview and they're scratching their heads and they're saying, this guy's a security guy. I wonder what kind of a cell phone he has. And so I have devised a 10-question test that's going to find out if, in fact, you are a card-carrying nerd or not, Nick. So let's find out. So Nick, I break into your house, and how many old-fashioned desktops do we find sitting around there?
Sitting around in active use, you'll find one Mac desktop. In my basement, you'll probably find half a dozen, including an old Unix machine.
Well, you get points for the Unix, but the desktops I don't know about. Right. And you personally, how many cell phones have you purchased in the last year?
I've only purchased one.
That's weak nerds. Nerds go every 3 or 4 months. I can't stand it unless I have another one. Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
No, I don't. I think I've been so security conscious now for a while that, and I see my kids and what they do on different forms of digital media, social media, that I've kind of elected to stay a little bit under the radar.
And do you have a personal blog?
No, not currently.
And what kind of smartphone do you have?
I have an Android. I use a Samsung.
That's an interesting security question, isn't it?
Yeah.
And what is the most popular app you've used on that in the last 30 days?
It's probably, I travel so much, it's probably a combination of some of the more mundane things like Uber and Parkmobile. Probably the most critical one I have, though, is Duo Mobile. So
Uber's
VPN in.
It's surging, you know?
It's
incredible.
It is. Really easy to use.
And so we break into your house this afternoon. How many tablet devices do we see floating around there?
You'll see two.
Two, okay.
One Android, one Mac.
And are you active in any social networking sites?
I primarily am in LinkedIn. I use that quite a bit, reaching out to different contacts. Obviously, a lot of people use it for recruiting, finding a lot of updates about what else is going on with certain people.
1.2 million in the federal government active on LinkedIn. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
1.2 million. Thousands in DOD. It's a very big trend, and it's something really fascinating. And if you want to connect to Nick, it's Nick, U-R-I-C-K. Just type it in, and you'll see his picture there and link into him and find out what's going on. When was the last status update in LinkedIn, speaking of which?
Probably about 2 weeks ago. There's always a couple of little tweaks that you notice that you have to do here and there. Keep things current. And, as far as I'd like to do more on that, as far as kind of keeping current company information available through there.
And how many groups are you involved in LinkedIn? You got to go to my workshop, buddy.
About 10. And I think I'm badly in need of a John Gilroy workshop.
Yeah. And last book you read was electronic or paper?
It was paper. So
Oh, you know, you were, you know, people thought you were a nerd. You're talking about zero-day attacks and 20 years experience. And my goodness gracious,
you know,
you're disappointing. You're on the normal scale now.
I know. But I walk through the airport. You're traveling. I invariably always wind up in a Hudson News, and I pick up one or two bucks.
My goodness, you know, I hate these normal people. You know, give me some nerds. I don't even know. There's plenty of nerds at your company, believe me. And I'll bet those people who detect the zero-day attacks, those are the nerds, because I know that personality type. That's work 18 hours, work all day long, all day Christmas, and solve that problem, and then get on the motorcycle somewhere. Isn't it? You know those types. I know those types.
Sure, sure.
It's kind of interesting here. We've talked about the Internet of Things. We've talked about strange things like Saffron Rose and zero-day threats and everything else. And it's always hard to predict the future, whether it's baseball or football or the hockey season coming up. So what do you think is going to happen with the federal government here in the next 4 to 5 years as far as security goes? You think they're going to understand? Are they going to respond to some of the suggestions that General Alexander made at the last conference here in town? Or where do you see it all heading?
You know, it's kind of interesting. If you look at different countries across the planet, you know, China, very interested in our intellectual property. Places in Eastern Europe, Russia, Ukraine, really looking to monetize cyber by doing a lot of theft. I mean, we've seen a lot of that with the banks and retailers. We see some destructive forces like the Syrian army. They wanted to face. But if you kind of follow the intellectual property and follow the money, I think that's kind of where we're going to see this state of the threat evolve. One of the most interesting things I kind of gleaned out of the last year's announcements, DoD is adding 6,000 cyber warriors. So 6,000 soldiers to their workforce to deal with cyber out of the Pentagon. And to me, that kind of represented, you know, the government taking this seriously, updating tools and architectures, but putting a combat element behind this, which you really haven't seen before.
My son has a friend at the Citadel. And I think some of the schools like the Citadel and West Point in Annapolis, I think they're offering now majors or maybe emphasis in cyber security and cyber warfare. That's
sure.
Who would have thought of that 10 years ago?
No one. And even the colleges, University of Maryland, UMBC, are really starting to focus on driving those types of regimens so that we can have students taking over those places in government as far as filling those type of cyber roles. I think it's going to be vital to the workforce. I think a couple of other things that government is going to have to figure out is, you know, in the private industry, we see a two-way share of threat intelligence between companies like FireEye, Mandiant, and then back to those commercial concerns. The government will accept all that as a one-way feed, but don't feed back a lot of the threat intel that they have. As a matter of fact, they have a very difficult time even sharing between agencies. There's liability issues, there's some privacy issues, but mainly it revolves around liability. So legislation getting enacted in the next few years hopefully will happen. The ability to share indicators, share actionable, rich intel will also happen. And I kind of see that vital as a key component to moving forward against the current threat landscape and the future threat landscape.
I teach at Georgetown University in the graduate school there. And in the technology management program, you have to have an ethics course before you graduate. In fact, my course in social media marketing has to have an ethics component to it. And I think this is the interesting question for the younger generation coming up now. Okay, little Sally Smith, you've detected a vulnerability in your system. Now what do you do? Do you tell your boss? Do you release it to the public? Do you shut up? What legally can you do? What legally can't you do? Especially if you're in the Pentagon. If it's a bank and finds a vulnerability, what should they do? These are ethical questions. I think this has got to be part of the discussion.
Oh, it does. It does, absolutely. You know, it's interesting, at the AmeriCon conference, General Alexander was commenting on what do they do with these threats? So they work within the law, they work within their mandates, and their people go through over 400 hours of training just to be able to handle these types of issues. How do I answer the ethics question?
At the Pentagon, or where are these people? Who are you referring to?
At the NSA.
Huh.
How do we report these? And it has to be done within the law. And 100% of those are audited. You know, that was the claim. So I see that kind of emanating across government as far as people, processes, and controls of how to deal with threats, container threats, remediated threats in an environment where you can safely report.
And you can't put your feet up and have a cigar because this is a vulnerability that's attacking someone right now. You have to take that class and be prepared to know what to do in different situations. And this really resonates well with my students because a lot of them get the technology aspects of it, but these more subtle aspects, and oh, by the way, ethically I have to do this, legally I can't.
Mm-hmm.
That's that's the dilemma. I think we should do a whole radio show just on the ethics of reporting a vulnerability and how to do it and when and why not. I mean, this is a serious question.
I think some agencies suffer from there's a shoot the messenger mentality, and we need to move away from that.
Yeah, I can hear that. Thank you very much for listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Our guest today was Nick Urich. He's Vice President of Sales at FireEye. Thanks, Nick.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 9, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.